People I Almost Know, Episode 34.
I mean, I guess everyone knows this when you hit a certain age. There's just so many pieces to me, and some of which contradict other parts of me. And it's like, how do I make sense of this jumble of meanness, you know?
You think you know people, but there's always something more to learn. I don't even know myself that well. And if you ask, people will tell you their stories, and sometimes the stories they tell are as much about us as they are about them. I'm Michelle, and this is People I Almost Know. Hi, everyone, and welcome to the podcast. Our guest today is Renee Schulz Jacobson. I've almost known Renee for a few years now, since I started blogging back in 2011, and I've known her as a teacher and a writer, but I've been intrigued and excited these last months to see Renee reveal her artist self to the world. She's a true example of our podcast model that there's always something more to learn about the people you think you know. I'm delighted to have Renee with us today on the show to talk about becoming a professional artist and how it's helped her find herself again after a long illness. Here's Renee.
Hi, I'm Renee Schulz Jacobson from Renee A. Schulz Jacobson's blog, Because Life Doesn't Fit in a File Folder. And I am tiptoeing back to the blogosphere after being away for a long time.
Well, and this is what we're going to talk about, is because you've been a teacher for 20 years, and you're a writer, and now you're doing art. And I know that you started art as a therapeutic exercise, but I wanted to know, were you always an artist before? Had you been an artist before? Was this something brand new for you?
You know, even hearing you say the words, calling me an artist, still makes me, not cringe, that's too strong of a word, but I've never identified myself as an artist. I feel like I just do these, you know, I have projects that I do. I've always loved every art, paint, ink. I've made homemade stuffed animals, sewing. I mean, I've always loved it. One of the things that my house is covered, filled with my own paintings, and one of the things I always love to do is, go drive around and find other people's discards, furniture, and then I would bring it home and, paint it. And so we have a whole bunch of that in our house, stuff that I found from college that I just kind of got beat up. And people would always sort of say, "You're amazing, that's so incredible." But to me, maybe it's a low self-esteem thing, I don't know, but I never really thought of it as that great. It just seemed like, well, I rescued this and I'm fixing it up, or, I did this painting, can't everyone do this too? And literally, I've only just recently come to understanding that, oh, not everyone can do that. What I do is, not everyone can do it. And just, it's as simple as that. And so I'm really appreciative in some weird ways for this, the last 15 months of being out of commission, where I couldn't write, couldn't read, couldn't talk on the phone. It was really grim. The only thing I could really do was just paint, and that I couldn't even do at the beginning. So it really does sort of feel like coming back to my roots, as a kid, where I just like to play with crayons and markers and paint.
So, I mean, did you ever get training? How do you know? Because I'm looking at your artwork, and I'm like, this is real. This isn't something that I could just, I could paint a picture and it would look like a kindergarten picture, So did you ever get training, or did this developed over the years then, that you know these techniques because of trial and error?
Well, first of all, I feel like my paintings are like childlike paintings.
So
incredulous. I'm so incredulous that of course you all could do it. This is what people do when they're 6 years old. But I have had, if you want to call it training outside of regular school, I have taken art class and painting classes, and I have, like I said, I've always dabbled. So it's not like I, hadn't painted in 30 years or something. Just I've always done this. I used to make handmade stationery and sell it at a local store. And that was, I've always kind of done stuff. And like I said, I've always, presents for me often included some kind of artwork, and I just never really shared it with the general public before. So it's kind of cool to do it now.
Well, and I can verify to you that no, yours don't look like kindergarten pictures, but also that, you know.
Really? Really,
no, they don't. They look like, and I know this doesn't sound right, but they look like real art.
Thank you. Real. Well, whatever they are, people seem to like them, and maybe it is because they're kind of whimsical, and, you know, maybe they, you know, art always has, like, an emotional content to it,
yeah.
Right? So maybe there is something childlike to them that seems to appeal to people. So whatever it is, I'm just glad people kind of like it. It makes me feel good.
Yay. Well, how do you come up with the ideas, and, like, where does the inspiration come from, do you think? And one of the questions I wanted to ask you also with that is that, you know, the first paintings that I was seeing a lot of these little creatures and monsters, mm-hmm. and that mm-hmm. seems to have, I don't see that as much anymore. Is it because you're not showing them, or has your inspiration changed?
Oh, that's a great question. I sort of have, right now, I have a lot of projects going on, and one thing is that I'm getting ready. It's the holiday season, so I'm getting ready to do a bunch of little shows.
Okay.
And so I actually have my stuff in a local gift shop, and I've had to sort of keep her stock. And then I have another show this Saturday. So my focus lately has been the little canvases that I do, those little 4x4 canvases, because I really do believe it's that, you know, like, when you try to go buy a piece of artwork somewhere, they're always like a gajillion dollars. And my philosophy has been, because everyone, you know, should be able to afford an original piece of art. And I feel like those little, you know, $20 canvases they make it so people can have like a little bit of original art in their house. And so I have definitely been working on those recently. And then as far as the larger paintings, which were all those little creatures, those were definitely born out of, like, where I was coming from. And I'm working on a children's book, which I actually had written the text to quite a while ago. It's actually one of my blog posts called Shecky the Meckle and His Technicolor Groove. And when I posted
I remember that
a long time ago. Do you remember that one?
Yeah. I don't remember all of it, but I remember the name, and I remember reading it.
Yeah, and so, well, P.S., I barely remembered it, but I went back and was like, maybe I could do a children's story with these characters that I'm creating, and that is what I'm working on right now. So each one has to become its own painting, basically, and I'm just sort of dabbling in how I want to do it, if I want to really do it as pieces of work, or if I want to do it on the computer, or what. So I'm sketching and, you know, just storyboarding right now, but I'm working on that. So I have a bunch of new creatures that will come out of it, or that are coming out of it, but I just haven't put them onto larger canvases because I'm trying to get this story done.
Yeah.
And then, or I shouldn't even say get it done. I'm just trying to start it, you know, really get that synced up. And then the third thing is that, you know, I am still painting, and while all of those paintings have sold, you know, I'm always painting. It's just that right now my focus is to try and kind of get the bread and butter stuff for the holiday season. And I'm just amazed I've been able to make money off of this. It's like living the dream, you know, like when you can make money doing something you love to do. So that's why we haven't seen more of those, but there will be more as soon as I start working on the book and turning those sketches into larger paintings.
I've been thinking about this recently, and how sometimes when you're writing, things just, they come out of you, and you'll try to write it a certain way, but it won't be written that way. It's like it has to have its own way. And sometimes I'll write and I am actually constructing something, you know, and I'm building it. And sometimes I write and it's flowing out of me because it has to have its own way. So are you, when you talk about, you know, you've got a show and things that you have to do, are you finding that it's the same with art, that sometimes it just has to come out? And so you have to put on the canvas what it's almost like what it's running itself. And then there's sometimes where you're constructing, like you're putting together the shows and you're constructing this book. So it's kind of two separate areas of artistic inspiration.
Yeah. Well, so if what I'm getting at is just sort of, you're asking about, you know, how the process works. And I find, I don't know how artists do this, because I definitely find there are certain days where, you know, that muse is not happening. I mean, much more for me than when I was writing, where I could always sit down and churn something out. This is like, ugh, nothing's happening, and really? I don't want to paint, and, you know, or if I want to paint a certain thing to, like, work on a book or something, it just, it sometimes isn't happening at all. So, I do find that sometimes I get into a sweet spot, and it's almost like, you know, I can do 18 little paintings, you know, in a sitting, and like every single one is adorable, and the colors are all right, and the hearts are all perfect, and the, you know, it just all works. And then there are some times where like it just feels tedious and long, and I just know I need to put it away. So when that happens, you know, that's when I gotta go do something different. Otherwise, I really am gonna muck it up. And you know, it's the same as similar with writing. You know, if you try and force it, or you're not really in the space, you're just going to spend a zillion hours and probably end up deleting it anyway. So definitely have to be in the right place. It's very much like the writing process, but I find it, for me, because it's not my natural medium, or not as natural as writing, that it's much, you know, I cannot fake this. It's a visual medium. I can't fake it. So, because everyone else to see that it doesn't have the same quality to it. I guess it is the same with writing. You know, you can tell when you sort of hit a dud.
So
I have a couple paintings upstairs right now that are not finished, and I just needing to find the right energy and the right space. But it'll all get done. All get done.
Well, and that's really interesting to me, the how that works, because I can't even figure out how does that work, and how is it that I'm getting off track, but I've got a character right now that she has to have this certain name, and I've tried to rename her because I don't want her to have that name, but she refuses. And I'm like, Michelle, this is you. This is your own brain. She can't refuse. And yet she is, you know. I'm wondering if it's the same way with art, you know, and it sounds like
it is. You know, I mean, okay, I'm going to get weirdly philosophical, but I think that any kind of art, whether it's dance or writing or music or, you know, painting, I think that little thing that you're talking about where your character is rebelling or whatever, or your, you know, your music won't go a certain way, or your writing is, you know, you keep going, you know, you're forcing it to go, it's feeling forced or whatever. I think that that's the voice of God in there. That's the connection. It's the soul connection, where it's like, that is the creative piece that is given to each of us, and you really have no choice but to listen to it. You can try and fight it and go in a different way, but you're just going to make it harder for yourself. So I've learned to listen. I've really learned to listen to that voice exclusively. So when that voice says, you have to do this, get up there, go get that hand moving, then I do. And if it's not happening, I absolutely do not try and force it. I'm like, I'll go call a friend, or I'm going to go for a walk, or I will read a book, or I'll do something different, you know, clean my closet, whatever it is that I want to do, until that voice, that God voice comes out and says, okay, now I know what to do. And for me, that has never failed. It just never fails. If I try to go against that voice, I'm just not going to have the right product. I mean, the end product will be negatively influenced. So you got to listen to that character. I didn't hear if you were saying the character wants a certain name or doesn't want a certain name, but you know, it'll come. It'll come, whichever it is, and you just can't ignore it. So.
Well,
don't even try.
Yeah, I totally agree with you there. So now getting to the business part, you obviously you started this for yourself. It was something you were doing for yourself, and you were having that creativity come out of you. But when did you decide, hey, I think I'm going to sell these? And how did that develop into, you know, people seeing them and wanting them and selling
that's
them?
That's such a good question. I actually don't exactly remember who was the first person to buy one. I think that I put them on Facebook just to show people, like, I'm alive and this is what I'm doing. And I think that's what first happened. And then a lot of people hit like, and then a couple of people private messaged me and said, you know, is that for sale or what are you going to do with it?
Wow.
So I was kind of struck by how many people, you know, this is what I was trying to say at the beginning. I just never thought that my paintings were like any big whoop. So I was like, well, I don't know what I'm going to do with this painting. Sure, I'll sell it to you. I mean, what am I going to do with it? So that's how it started. And then it kind of morphed into something else that got a little too frenzied, which I will share. I had a bunch of people at that point who expressed an interest in buying the smaller paintings, because the smaller paintings started after the larger paintings, where people were like, well, you know, could you just do something small? So I was like, sure, I can whip off something for it. You know, so what ended up happening was I got a lot of people's telephone numbers, and I just sort of said, I'll take your phone number, and the next time I produce something, I'll just text you. Well, what I did was I made a bunch of these little paintings, and I just texted about 50 people at once, and they were gone in one text. I mean, people texted back, and I'm like, I want that one, you know, and they were gone. And then people kept texting afterwards saying, well, they kind of got into a little bit of a bidding war with each other, which was not my intention. And so I just had to shut that down. But it really did make me see, like, it was sort of a good confidence builder, because I thought, wow, there really is a market out there for this. And so I, you know, happily sent those off to my friends. And then, you know, I just decided I was going to set a price point, start a Facebook page. And now I even have an Etsy page, whatever. And and now I have a local shop that Bellamore, which is has stock. And then I'm going to work on in the new year getting three more in the sort of the local town nearby, so that there's a couple more. But none of this has been very intentional. It's all sort of slowly unrolled itself. And I haven't tried to take on too much too fast, because, you know, I just can't, when you know, you just can't create a painting in a second. It takes time. So
yeah.
After the holidays, I will definitely be able to do more and see where I am. But it's all happening slowly and organically, and in a way that's comfortable to me, because one of the things I have to be really careful about right now is taking on too much. I mean, my most important things are just being true to myself and being a good mom and being a good wife and being a good friend to people and being good to myself, not necessarily order, being good to myself first. So I just got to take things slowly, and it's all coming together. It really is. It's just all coming together. The weirdest thing for me is that a lot of my writing has shifted from like the person that I feel like I was before to this more introspective, introverted person that I feel like I am now. I mean, it's not to say that I'm an introvert, but I'm nowhere near the, like, extroverted person that I was before. I just feel like this experience of, you know, being sick for, like, 15 months has changed me, you know. And it's not like I see the world darkly or anything. I'm so grateful to be feeling good. And even though, like, it's a gray, miserable day outside right now, but I'm, like, you know, it's not bad, you know, it's like, I'm not feeling pain, you know, I'm feeling alive. And I just don't think that I'm somehow a little bit more serious, you know,
really?
I mean, not bad, but I'm a little more serious, and I'm a little more introspective. That's all I can put it. So,
well,
or maybe I always was, and now I just, you know, have an excuse to really be
highlight it. Yeah. Well, you know, and when you have an illness, especially a long illness, it seems to me like you would spend a lot of time in your own brain.
Yeah, no question. And so I spent too much time in my own brain. In fact, I definitely realized, like, you do not want to hang out in my head. It's not a happy, you know, it's not. When you're not feeling good, it's not a happy place to be. And, you know, you think you're never going to get better, and people keep saying, you will. And it's like, how can you know I'm ever going to feel better? There's no evidence to that, you know? And so I'm just so grateful when I wake up and like, my God, I slept last night, which is a blessing. And then I'm not having muscle cramps, and, you know, my, you know, just like I'm not having weird phantom pains, and what, you know, whatever it is that it, that you're suffering from. And so it just, every day I just wake up well rested. I'm just like, yes, it's gonna be a good day. It's gonna be a good day, even if it's gloomy or snowy or cold or hot or whatever it is. I'm just happy to be here and be able to see my son and see my friends and just be here. I don't know how else to put it.
Yeah. Well, let me ask you, as you have gone through this process, has any of it been scary to you?
Oh my God. Yeah. A lot of it's been scary. I mean, you know, I need to probably talk to some like cancer survivors or people who have survived after a long illness. There's this weird thing for me that I could go backwards. Like, what if all those weird pains or the lack of, you know, the insomnia comes back? Like, what if I can't, what if, you know, that weird chemically induced depression comes back and like, I cannot leave the house, or like, what if these weird things come back, you know? And it's, my doctors are like, it won't come back. It doesn't do that. You've moved through, but it's really scary. And if I, you know, stay in my head too long, I can convince myself that it's coming back. So, but yeah, so there's that. And then, you know, there have been other like more scary things, like just, feeling disconnected from, this is actually what I was just writing about, feeling really like Rip Van Winkle, like being away from the world for 15 months is weird. I was mostly, you know, in my house because I just wasn't able to go out, and coming out is like, the world is different. I wasn't able to nurture friendships. You know, it's like entire buildings had been painted or knocked down. And then there was like, you know, there's this like new Dunkin' Donuts in town. And there was something there before, this big garage door place, and it was gone. There's this new building up. I'm like, where did that come from? And you know, like neighbors have cut down trees, or, you know, whatever, trees are blooming or, you know, gone. And so it's just like driving around, seeing how different it is. We have new neighbors across the street. I mean, it doesn't sound like a big deal, but like, you know, people have their lives and they're moving on, and you're just staying still. And so, you know, what I'm trying to do now is reconnect and, you know, revive relationships that I didn't nurture for 15 months. The weird part of that is figuring out who I want to revive these relationships with, right? Because when, you know, some people show up for you when you're not feeling good, and other people disappear. And there's some people that I, you know, like a whole lot, but like, it's scary. It's like, okay, I'm going to reach out to these people because I like them, but they haven't been there for me at all in the last 15 months. We'll see how that feels, you know?
Yeah.
So there's definitely this tiptoeing back into friendships, which, you know, I'm not mad really at anyone for however they were the last 15 months, because probably I don't even know, you know, I don't know what they were going through. And it's hard to be there for somebody who's sick. So, I know in the past I haven't necessarily been the most empathetic friend when I've had friends, you know, or acquaintances who have gone through illnesses or spouses with illnesses. And now I think I've really got a much better understanding of what you need to do. But you can only get that by going through something yourself.
Yeah.
I guess I would say the one other thing that's been really scary is just seeing my son change so much. And, you know, he went from an eighth grader to go into high school during this thing, and he went from like my sidekick and the child who, you know, we did everything together, to sort of this more independent man, and he just does not need me the way that he used to. And going through this, I just, you know, I wanted him to sit on the couch and hug me and play games and, you know, tell me I was going to be okay. And he's like, I'm going to fencing now, or I'm going to go in this room and close the door now. And that's been really challenging and also scary, because I thought that I just didn't have the perspective at the point while this was all happening. But I thought that I was doing something to cause him to get more isolated or private, but it turns out it's an appropriate developmental stage.
It is.
I know. Oh, okay. So I'm not wrecking my kid. And, you know, and I have to remember back when I was a teenager and like, what was I like when I was 15? My door was closed most of the time, if I was even home. So I just feel lucky that my son likes to be at home, likes to have friends come over. And, he's doing all the normal 15-year-old stuff.
Well,
but yeah, it's definitely been a scary time figuring things out, because it's not easy to go through this, but it's not easy for family members to help you when you're going through.
Yeah. Either. Well, people don't know what to do. And I'm someone, I'll have to admit that I'm someone who disappears because not that I don't love the person, but I don't know what to do. And I'm scared that I'm going to mess it up. So I'm like, I'll let you have your space. And that's not always the right thing.
Well, everybody's different, right? I mean, some people want that kind of privacy and other people would love the visits, and you can't know what to do if the person isn't saying. So,
that's,
you know,
true.
And I wasn't able to say, you know, what I wanted or in a way that would be communicated. But, you know, when it comes to, you know, that, like you're saying, I think that, you know, you just do what feels right for you. And if that's disappearing, okay. And if it's bringing over a meal, that's great. Or if it's just stopping by to, you know, have a couple words and say, I'm thinking of you. But I do think it's really scary, and especially when I was going through, because unlike cancer or the flu or, you know, an operation, or even like, you know, cancer these days, I mean, all those things, people kind of have an idea of what to do. You know, you can bring someone tissues, or you can bring somebody, you know, like I said, like a meal, or, you know, you can do little things. This thing that I was going through, this benzodiazepine withdrawal, no one knows what that is unless they've gone through something similar. And so people are like, it just sounds like I lost my mind, which essentially it kind of did for a while. These medications are really powerful, and I had no idea. And so it just took a little while for my brain to reset itself. And thank goodness, you know, I guess I had a good one to start. But it's, you know, what can you say? It's like scary. You're talking about mental illness, and, you know, I was not there, and it was not because I had a baseline problem. It's because of the medication that caused the problem, you know?
Yeah.
I was not definitely, I had a bunch of people who came over to visit me during this process, and I will tell you, I was not, I should probably not have been receiving visitors.
No.
I was not in my right mind, and so only my most true blue, wonderful, loyal, you know, friends could stand it, because it's really hard to see someone that you care about in such a strange way. I mean, you know, I thought people were going to hurt me. I you know, it was like weird paranoid. Oh God, it was weird. It was just,
Well, and obviously I don't know. I can't really imagine it. I can picture it.
I can hardly, you know, even now, like that I've gone through it, I almost can't remember it. And I think that's part of the healing. And I thank goodness I did put some things on paper, because I don't think I would remember. We went to my husband's high school reunion last weekend, and I didn't hear this from the person, but my husband told me this and said to him, you know, Renee called me during all this, and she was like not in her right mind. I don't even remember calling that person. Like, I don't remember. And that made me think, how many people did I call? Like, who else did I call and not make sense with, you know? But it's embarrassing. And it was scary. I was not in my right mind. What are you gonna do?
Well, how did the artwork help you in that process and make you feel better?
Yeah, it really has. So there were a couple things. One is, slowly I started to, at the beginning of that whole thing, I could not do anything. It's very hard to explain. I could not eat. I could not, I couldn't go outside. It was terrible. Slowly, as things got better, and my eyes weren't burning, just craziness, and I was able to do art, it was just such a relief to have something that I could do to basically pass time. And then as that, you know, went on, to be able to create things that people like. And as time went on even further, it was like, oh my gosh, and now I'm actually even able to write a little bit and like post them on Facebook. So it was for me, it was actually the first way that I could punctuate healing or see healing. It was like, well, I wasn't able to do this, you know, 3 months ago, I would never have been able to do this. Or, 2 months ago, I wouldn't have been able to do this. Or even last week, I wouldn't have been able to do this.
Yeah.
So those things, the creating a project, which I could look at and then see how they were changing, or, you know, the details were becoming more intricate. Like at the beginning, I was just, you know, I couldn't do those large paintings, but still it became larger and more details. And the smaller paintings that are like hearts and stuff, I started to create new scroll work, which is more delicate. And so as I've moved on, I'm like, wow, these are really punctuating the healing process. And that was actually huge for me to see not only the product getting better, but like just that I was clearly getting my creative juju back. I mean, there's no other way to put it, that it was like, oh my God, it gave me some faith that my brain was healing.
Yeah, and you know what I was just thinking is those paintings were like a journal of your healing.
Yeah, totally. When I couldn't write, they really do in some way punctuate the process. And I don't really know how else better to articulate that, just to say that, you know.
Yeah.
They do, even like, you know, some of the little creatures that said courage, or, you know, just one word, you know, it's like, I'm working on being brave here, people, you know, or roar, you know, it's like, I'm trying to get back to my life, you know, I'm fighting for it here. And so there were definitely, you know, I think the other thing is that I've always, you know, our relationships are the most things important to us in our life. And in some of those paintings with the creatures, there's always this sort of tension between these two characters, whether it was a creature with its mouth open, the more delicate, small creature inside. I just, you know, everything felt so fragile to me. And so a lot of the art is sort of just, it wasn't a conscious attempt. It just was somehow, like you said, journaling or documenting what I was going through. So yeah, it was like there were these sort of scary looking creatures with big teeth, and then these little more delicate creatures maybe near the teeth or the fangs, or, you know, inside the mouth. And you just got a feeling of that relationship between, you know, safety and danger or whatever, which is what I really felt like I was going through every single solitary day for probably a year. I didn't really turn the corner on this until about 12 months, which is really still pretty recent.
Yeah. Oh yeah. Okay, so now this is not just a hobby. You are, and I know you don't feel comfortable with this, but you are a professional artist. You sell your paintings. What have been the challenges of becoming a professional artist?
Oh, Lord. Yeah, I am having a hard time with that term. Okay, so the challenges I don't know if there have been, I mean, maybe the challenges are, like in any other kind of artistic venue, right? Like, so people write a book and then it's a success, and then they worry if they can ever do anything as well. So, you know, or like you're a ballerina and you dance in this amazing thing, and then you wonder if you'll be able to do it as well. I wouldn't say that I'm paralyzed by fear, but you know, I guess you feel like you're only as good as your last painting. So, you know, a lot of those little creature paintings have received so much positive feedback that I definitely think about it like, oh God, I bet, you know, I should probably create another critter. And, you know, but the thing is, I think coming through this, you know, after being sick, I think I just have like the perspective to go, stop that, Renee, just do it for yourself. And if you just do it for yourself, it will come out fine. You know, my son also taught me some pretty good perspective, which is really funny. Way back, I created this this octopus, and it was really bad. I mean, to me, it was really bad. And, you know, I kept trying to tweak it and fix it. And my son was like, Mom, it's done. Sign it and slap it up there, which meant, you know, just like somebody will like it, sell it. And I was like, no, it's not done. And don't you know, of all the paintings, that one is the one that had the most interest. People were like, I want it on a mouse pad. I want it on a shower curtain. I want it on a T-shirt. I looked at my son. I was like, you are so right. Like, how did you know that? And he said, because haven't you ever gone to Walmart? And I was like, what is your point? Like, where are you going with this? And he said, there are some really ugly things there, but you got to figure, they know what they're doing. Somebody's going to buy it. And he's like, not wrong. You know, like, you know, when you go into store, you're just like, God, these are awful, you know, but then people buy them. So he was right that, you know, I just need to not put pressure on myself, because somebody out there will always like it. And that's the thing with art too, is that it is so personal, and it touches some emotional chord in you, and it's a luxury. You know, I mean, clearly you don't need art to live. I mean, you need shelter and food and, you know, love, and but you don't need a little painting of a heart on the wall or a little painting of a creature on the wall. It's just a little something extra. So the people that buy it have that connection to whatever the piece is. And if they don't, well, okay, so then that one didn't happen. So, you know, whatever. Yeah. It's okay. But, yeah, I've really, probably the struggles have been just within myself to, like, want to produce something fast and good and, you know, as good as the last one or better. And that's just me being me. And I think we all have that, right? I mean, I think every artist has that desire to make sure that the next thing we write is as good or if not better than what we did last.
Absolutely. And that's interesting what you said. That's me being me. And I'm thinking, you know, you feel a little different, but you are who you are and you've come through the whole thing as you. And maybe more aspects of your personality have emerged and taken dominance.
Yeah.
But you are who you are. You're Renee.
I know. And, you know, even when you say that, I'm like, I feel like I still don't even know. There's so many pieces. I mean, I guess everyone knows this when you hit a certain age. There's just so many pieces to me, and some of which contradict each other, you know, which contradict other parts of me. And it's like, how do I make sense of this jumble of me-ness, you know?
Yeah.
But right? Do you have that too sometimes?
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah, so I guess I'm just trying to go day to day, you know, so hopefully people won't get furious at me if I'm, you know, say, well, yes, I said I felt that way yesterday, but today I don't. I am sorry. I am not that consistent, but that's really true that, you know, it's like ask me in an hour, I might feel differently. I don't even know. But well, thank you for saying that because it does make me feel, like I said, I feel much more introspective, but, you know, probably compared to some people, I'm not introverted at all. Or, you know,
well, figuring
me out as I go.
Let me ask you one last question. I know you have talked about this a little bit in the near future that you're going into more shops and things that you plan to do, but where do you see going in the future? Let me throw this out there, too. So I know you've also got your book that's going to combine your writing and your artwork. But in, say, 5 years, are you even looking that far in the future with where you want to go with art and writing?
I got to tell you, I'm not looking that far in the future. I'm just going to go back and say I am working on day-to-day to be the best person that I can be, to know myself and be true to myself, be a good, you know, mom and a good wife and a good friend. Like, that is pretty much, those are the most important things to me. And I just, you know, I'm going to just keep dabbling and keep growing. And, you know, I don't have any big plans, and that may disturb people, but I just am going from moment to moment because you just don't know. I mean, and I shouldn't say that I have no plans. Like I said, I'm going to get, you know, I'm definitely going to get my art into more places locally. But beyond that, I'm just trying to enjoy, and I feel like I've got enough coals in the fire right now to keep me warm.
It sounds like it. It really does. You got a lot going on already. Before we go, where can people find you on the internet?
Okay. Well, I'm all over the internet. You can find me on Facebook as Raz Jacobson Originals, if you're interested in seeing some of this art to which we were referring. You can friend me on Facebook as just a regular old friend, and that's Renee A. Schulz Jacobson. You can also find me via Etsy, just Raz Jacobson. This is that. I'm on Twitter. I'm at Raz Jacobson. And
you make it easy for us.
I know, right? And then my blog, and that is RazJacobson.com. And so I'm just Raz Jacobson all over the place. And I'm on LinkedIn. I'm on Google, but it's always Raz Jacobson. I think if you type that in, you get pictures and all kinds of things. So
cool.
I would love to connect with people.
Renee, thank you so much. This has been just a lovely chat.
Oh, Michelle, thank you. This has been flattering and fun. And I'm just so grateful for this opportunity to, you know, just to chat with you.
My thanks again to the lovely and talented Renee. I'll post some pictures of her work and the links to all the places you can find her. So I definitely encourage everybody to go and check out what she's been doing. Thanks so much for listening. I'm Michelle, and this has been People I Almost Know. If there's something you'd like to talk about or someone you'd like me to talk to, you can drop me a line on the website or give me a shout on Twitter or on Facebook. And if you'd like to meet other people I almost know, subscribe on iTunes or on the Stitcher app, or visit peopleialmostknow.com.